Thank you. Welcome. I just got back from a very long trip, 2 months. I don't know what I was thinking. That was a long one. It's 2 months, 7 cities. I'm still standing. It's a lot of people. So today, we're going to discuss a subject matter about the planetary systems in the universe and beyond the universe, according to Vedic understanding, according to the knowledge that is provided in the Vedas. Veda, as you know, means knowledge. It also means science. So what we discuss when we talk about the Vedas is a platform of knowledge and philosophical understanding. It is not a religion. Here, we do not discuss Hinduism. We're not putting forth Hinduism. Hinduism is a religion that many people follow, but that's not what we do here. Here we do Vaishnavism, simply worship, following Vishnu or God. It's not a religion, it's a system of knowledge and understanding. And the system of yoga most closely associated with it is bhakti, or the yoga of love and devotion. That is the focus here. But not love and devotion out of mere sentimentality or worse, fanaticism. Because oftentimes when people take up a religious practice, it is often based in sentimentality. And they have no strong philosophical basis or philosophical understanding. And they, people who have no understanding of what they believe, believe just because. Now, there's nothing wrong with having faith and belief, but it's also good to have your faith and belief grounded in a system of knowledge. Otherwise, you get he said, she said arguments. And this is typically where you run into dogmatic conflict. We're all going to heaven, you're all going to hell. No, I've heard that many, many times in my earlier life. If you don't believe like I do, well, then you're going to hell. That's all there's to it. And me and my bunch, we're going to heaven. Well, we're actually going to talk about heaven in many ways today. So you're in for a treat. I think you are, because it's fascinating stuff. And I mean, once you hear it and try to wrap your mind around it, myself, I believe it completely, 100%, because of my background in Vedic understanding, Sanskrit language, Sanskrit studies, and Eastern philosophy. I've studied pretty much all of them over a period of many years. There's nothing like this. There's nothing that resonates on these levels like this does. But you will make your own decision, of course. I've been reading a book while away. This book is called the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The Bhagavatam means the signs of God. Bhagavan is God. And it means the great signs of the sweet taste or sweet nectar of God. That's what it means. So I'm going to kind of read and explain as we go and try to help you to understand this. Sri Uttara Devi said, "The three planetary systems, Bhu, Bhuvar, and Svar, are the abodes of enjoyment of householders." Householders means your average person in the material world that has a family, is attached to family life, and all the things that go along with it. In other words, 99% of the people in the material world, pretty much. It's not saying anything negative about them, just saying that's who they are. They engage in pious activities with a desire to enjoy material results. Well, nowadays, they engage in less and less and less pious activities. Kalindi and I were speaking not long ago. It's interesting in Ireland, I think, well, we were talking about Ireland in particular, because for many, many years, Ireland has been a very Catholic country. I mean, for, what, hundreds of years? I don't know how long. A long time. Which meant everybody went to church on Sunday. Pretty much standard. The whole family went to church. Right? Now people have gravitated away from that. Away from the Catholic Church. For some good reasons. But what have they replaced it with? Going to church every Sunday is a pious activity. You're singing to God, you're worshiping God, you're praying, you're meditating on God. And then you say, well, I'm not doing that anymore for various reasons. I'm going to stay home and watch the football or go to brunch, whatever. A lot of people have not replaced it with another equivalent spiritual or religious activity. Fair statement, no? And look what happened. The Celtic tiger, when we descended or ascended, depending on which verb you like, into materialism. Materialism that was a little bit out of control. That, again, is a fair statement, I think. Right? And then the balloon burst. And people went from there, from the high, high, to the low, low. And what did they turn to? Well, I don't know exactly, but they became alienated and disillusioned, bewildered, broke. Many, many people have suffered greatly. So I think part of it is they've gotten away from the pious activities. That's my point. So you say, oh, I don't want to do Catholicism. Okay. Then what will you do? What will you replace it with? You have to have some spiritual connection. Because when you're riding high materially and everything's great, well, fine. But then when things aren't so great and things aren't working out well, then what? And there's a lot of people that have suffered a lot and for the reasons given. Okay. So this egg shape here on the poster near the bottom is one universe, as it says, one universe. This is the dividing line here, this light called the Brahma Jyoti, the spiritual light, Brahma Jyoti, between the material world. This is all the material world in which we live, and everything above here is the spiritual realm. The spiritual realm, they say, generally speaking, in the Vedas, is 3/4 of the creation. Spiritual creation, material creation. Okay, material creation has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and then it repeats. It's cyclical. Like what? Like the seasons. Right? We know that's how things work. Things work in cycles here. Why? Because we're governed by time. In the spiritual world, there is no beginning. There is no end. There is no past. There is no future. There's only the eternal now. And that's the definition of God. He who has no beginning. Now, sometimes they say in the Vedas there are 3 planetary systems, which is kind of more of a general division of the planetary systems. What are they when they use that division? Do you know?
A higher planet. earthly planets. Lower planets, what do you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Heavenly planets, earthly planets or middle planets, and lower planets or hellish planets. How it explains, there are three manifestations of Vishnu. Vishnu is God. So Vishnu says, okay, it's time for the creation. He lies down in what's called the causal ocean. And he goes into the yoga nidra, the mystic sleep. And he dreams the creation. I love that. He just dreams it. And it happens. Sometimes you dream of things consciously and unconsciously, and they happen. Correct? Well, he's 10 for 10. He's 100 for 100. Whatever he dreams actually happens. You sometimes, 60-40, you know? He dreams the creation, and at that time, he exhales. One breath. And out from the pores in his body while he's sleeping come these little bubbles. They're kind of, but they're actually like a bubble. These are the universes. Unlimited universes. Millions come out. Now here's the snapshot of one universe. Then, at the bottom of this universe, he in each universe, he again manifests himself in a similar Vishnu form. And this is it here. He lies on Sheshanaga, the serpent couch. And he goes into, again, his mystic slumber. This time, from the navel, comes the umbilicus. And this umbilicus comes out and at the end appears a lotus flower. So you might know that we all have this umbilicus thing going on in the womb. And then from that lotus flower appears this guy, Brahma, the creator. Brahma is responsible for creating life in each universe. Different Brahma, different universe. The Brahma in our universe, this time round, in the current creation, according to the Vedas, is four-headed. He has four heads. But he could have many, many heads, different universes. So this Brahma, he becomes conscious, he's sitting on the lotus flower, he looks around, and what does he see? Blackness. Nothing. And he is, within his heart, he is moved to meditate first on who am I and what is my purpose in life. Have you ever meditated on that? We all do. Right? He is no different. What the heck am I doing here? But can you imagine? There's nothing. Nothing around. And he hears two syllables. Because in the beginning, what's it say in the Bible? In the beginning was the?
Word.
The word. And the word was? Tapa. Tapa. Tapa means? Penance. Do penance. Do spiritual practice, do meditation. That's what tapas is. Tapa, tapas. So that's what he does. He goes into meditation. And from within his heart, Vishnu, he can't see Vishnu. It's not like he's... This is not to scale. It's not like, oh, so Vishnu, what should I do? No. He's way out there. He can't see Vishnu at the bottom. He's just out there in the blackness. What am I supposed to do? And it's revealed to him, you're supposed to create all the diversity in this universe. All the worlds, all the plants, all the insects, all the birds, all the animals, and all life. How many species of life are there in this universe? It tells you. 8,400,000. Get out your calculator. And 400,000 of that is humanoid. Humanoid. Can you find 400,000 species of humans on this planet? Good luck. There are many races on this planet. You will not find 400,000. Because there are many different species of humans in the different worlds. Some of them have snake heads. Some of them have horse heads. All of this stuff that you read, like in the Greek tradition, these are all beings that exist somewhere. It's not made up. It's been there for ages. So, we don't typically see people with a horse head, but they exist. Then you had centaurs, half man, and then the body of the horse, for example. So, he's talking about Bhuvar Svahar. What is the Gayatri Mantra? Om Bhur Bhuva Svaha Tat Savitur Varenyam. These three worlds, where are they on the map? Here they are, right here. Bhur Bhuva Svar. Bhur Bhuva Svar. These three, right in the middle. Now, I said there were three divisions, and beyond the three divisions, there is also regularly referred to 14 divisions of planetary systems in every universe. So here you're seeing all of these white words on this map are the 14 divisions. Okay. So where are we? We're right in the middle. Earthly realm. You know, not too hot, not too cold, not too heavy, not too light, not too ugly, not too beautiful, not too bad, not too good. Más o menos. That's what life is like here. You can find hellish places on earth. You can find heavenly places on earth. But you cannot find heavenly places like you can up here in the heavenly realm. So even, just take the three he's talking about. Bhur, that's where we are. Earth planet. Bhuvar Loka, Rakshasas and ghosts. That's what it says on here. And Svar, Svargaloka, the realm of 33 million demigods. 33 million demigods. Sounds like the Irish political system representation. There's a lot of representation there. But what do? They run the affairs of the universe. That's what they do. So, above these realms are the four planetary systems, Mahar, Janas, Tapas, and Satya. Mahar, Jana, Tapa, and Satya Loka. There they are. Okay? Which are the abodes obtained by serious spiritual practitioners? Namely, Brahmacharis or celibate students, vanaprastis, or those who have renounced household life for spiritual advancement, and yatis, or people who are renounced throughout their lifetime. These three realms, Bhur, Bhuva, and Svar, are obtained by persons who resolve to engage in pious activities, good deeds, in order to achieve various results, and by those who want to enjoy the fruits of work. Most of us in this world want to enjoy the fruits of our labor. We want to do things that will bring the fulfillment of desires, that will generate good karma. That's what we mostly want to do. But when you generate karma, yes, you can enjoy the fruits of your activities, but then you also have to keep taking birth. Because if you've generated good karma, you have to come back and enjoy the good karma. So you have to get the benefit. If you generate negative karma, you have to come back and suffer the negative karma. When people go to heavenly realms, that's here. People who are materialists and want to enjoy themselves in the material world, which is most people, they will get elevated. Like in the next life, you might get another birth in this world, on the earthly plane. And you may improve your life from last birth. You may be more beautiful. You may be more wealthy. You may be educated. You may be very talented. You may be famous. You may be influential. These are all examples of good karma. So that could happen here, or you could get elevated to Svarga. Svar or Svarga, same thing. Heavenly realm. Not these higher heavenly realms, just Svarga. That's as high as you're going to go. What happens in Svarga? Well, this is the heaven that most people talk about. They don't know much about heaven in other systems that I've studied, but they certainly do in this system. And there, that's where the gods reside, demigods or celestials, if you will, who run the universe. Now, are these pure beings? No. Are they running an agenda? Yeah, they are. Only they're more purified than we are, and they have a more powerful position, but they still can experience envy. They can still experience pride and those kinds of emotions. You know, they'd be subtler up there, as opposed to, you know, egregious sometimes down here. And you get to hang out with those people. There, they call it a Martya Loka, deathless. It isn't. Because sooner or later, if you get elevated to heavenly planet Svarga, how long do you stay? It depends on your amount of pious credits. It depends on your bank account. You can keep spending money using your laser card. Your laser card, right? Your Visa card. As long as there's money in your bank account. Correct? You can spend wildly or however you like. As soon as that money runs out, you're done. As soon as your pious credits, your sukriti, or your punya runs out, guess what? You come back down here in your next birth. So it depends. Now, if you are Mozart, for example, and you create, while you're on earth, absolutely wonderful music that everybody loves. Okay. When did Mozart leave the planet?
300 years ago.
300 years ago? Some, or longer? 150. He is still enjoying the results of his actions in the heavenly realm because we are still listening to his music. So when you do something that affects that many people in a positive way, and Mozart's music is not in the mode of ignorance, it's not in the mode of passion, it is in the mode of goodness. It has a much higher vibration, whether you like the music or not. That is music of a high, subtle vibration compared to Megadeth. Or Black Sabbath, or such groups, who those guys would be more in the mode of ignorance or darkness. No offense to those guys. Okay? So he keeps enjoying as long as we keep playing his music. His pious credits keep, his bank balance keeps building. So if you're going to go to this, to the heavenly realm, do something fantastic before you go.
Start composing now.
You better start composing now, Miriam. Miriam's going to start tomorrow, maybe today. Okay? So there, sense gratification in the heavenly realms is unlimited. Here, it's limited. Because the body can only handle so much. It doesn't matter what you like to do. If you did it all day long every day, you would get sick of it before long. No matter how much you love it. That's a fact. That is the law of satiation. Some of us like to eat nice foodstuffs. But we cannot eat unlimitedly because it will have a negative effect on us. We'll put on weight, we might get sick, we might become diabetic. I mean, make your list. We can't do it. We have a limit. In the heavenly realms, you can have whatever you want, as much sex, as many sweets, as much as anything as you want. That is the reward up there. You can have sex without pregnancy. If you don't want pregnancy, you just say, I don't want pregnancy. That's it. So, that's what happens in Svargaloka. But this is for people who are materialistically inclined. I want to enjoy through my senses. Well, however you can enjoy through your senses down here ain't nothing compared to how you can enjoy through your senses in the heavenly realm. This pales in comparison. And as beautiful as people can be here, and there are many, many beautiful people on our planet, as I'm sure we all agree, men and women, the people there are way more beautiful. Way more beautiful. Can you imagine? We haven't even talked about the spiritual world. Because in the spiritual world, it's beyond yet another level or levels. Those people who are not motivated by desires for fruitive results, who are absorbed only in executing their particular occupational duties, their swadharma, they're doing their dharma, they're acting in harmony with their nature, reach the higher realms such as Maharloka, which are situated above these three middle planetary systems. So right after Svargaloka, the next one is Maharloka, the next one is Janaloka, the next one is Tapaloka, and the final one is Satyaloka, and that's where Brahma, the creator, lives, in Satyaloka. Can you reach that? Yes, you can. You can reach these, but you have to be completely dedicated to spiritual practice. But it says, even by doing your duty, by acting in harmony with your nature, and by offering the fruits of your actions to God, so in other words, having a spiritual consciousness, and that's why we're all here, because that's what we talk about here, you can reach Maharloka or higher. Have you heard of the seven sages? It's explained in the Vedas that the stars in the sky are all, each star is a realized being. He's a star. Or you like to say in Ireland, ah, you're a star. It's a very common expression here in Ireland. But we use the expression, that this person's a star. You know, a music star or a Hollywood star or, you know. Well, there are stars. Those stars are actually perfected beings that you see in the sky. The Big Dipper, those are the seven sages. They're seven stars. And for each creation, there are seven sages that are in charge of holding or providing the knowledge, the higher knowledge for us in the universe. People who are essentially practicing spirituality can reach the realms such as Maharloka, which are situated above the three planetary systems. There they are progressively liberated through the purification of their consciousness. So you, wherever you need to go, if you reach that high, you just, then you keep working on yourself. So you get to the next level, to the next level, to the next level. Just as we do down here, for whatever it is we're working toward. So then it says, Shiva himself, or Rudra, says, they quote him here, a person obtains the position of Brahma after performing his occupational duties for 100 births. Then after the great cosmic dissolution, the Mahapralaya, Brahma and all of us are liberated upon reaching Vaikuntha, the eternal unchanging abode. There are three forces in the universe. What are they? Creation, maintenance, and destruction. And there are three deities or personalities that are specifically in charge of these three forces in the universe. Do we see these three forces around us? Always and everywhere. Creation is when things come into being. Maintenance is when they last for a while, they maintain. And destruction or dissolution is when they come to an end. Do we see that in spring? We see creation in spring. We see maintenance in summer. And then we see dissolution in fall. And what do we see in winter?
Before the creation.
Right. Into a state of?
Dormancy.
What's the word? I can't think of it.
Dormancy.
Dormancy. Into a state of dormancy. Right? Same here. Same. So, Vishnu, who is God, this is Vishnu here. This is Vishnu here with Lakshmi. He's got the club down there, and Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune. And this is Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune here. That's his wife, his consort. As I've told you many, many times, there's no God without the goddess. No. So, Vishnu, he takes the portfolio. He does yet another form of himself, of the maintainer. His job is to maintain everything. Brahma, as we've explained, is what? The creator. His job is to create the diversity in the universe. When you read more about this in detail, you will find that Brahma sometimes screws up. And he makes something, he creates some beings, and he goes, oh my God, what have I done? I got that wrong. And I'm not sure what he does with them, but he gets rid of them and starts over.
Dinosaurs.
Maybe dinosaurs, I don't know. It's, you know, like a pot, like a sculptor or a potter takes clay and they make something. And then they go, oh, that didn't turn out so well. And then they mash it all up again and you start all over. It's kind of what Brahma does on occasion. See, he doesn't always get it right. The third person involved in dissolution or destruction is Shiva.
Oh, I know
Shiva. Of course you know Shiva. And there she, you know them all, I think, my friend. You're a pretty learned guy for a small guy. So there's Shiva and his consort. What's her name?
Parvati.
Parvati. Why is she called Parvati?
From the mountain.
Parvata means mountain. Because her father is Himavat, Himalaya. She's the daughter of the Himalaya. That's her father. The god of the mountain. Okay. So that's why you all see them there hanging out on the mountain. Now this mountain is not on earth. This is beyond that, but okay. So Shiva is in charge of destruction or dissolution. Things must come to an end. You know, flowers will appear. They'll maintain for a while, and then they'll turn to seed. No, where they'll die off. And then you got to deadhead them so that the next ones will come in, right? So that's Shiva's job, bringing things to an end. Vishnu, the maintainer, is 100% God. This is God, 100%. Shiva is 75% God. 75%. So he is a very, very high, high being. In Hinduism, the main person they pray to is Shiva. And Shiva is known as Ashutosh. Very easily pleased. Ashutosh means quickly pleased, easily pleased. But conversely, he's easily angered too. So you gotta be careful. But Shiva will help you fulfill material desires very quickly. Very quickly. All the yogis, most of the yogis pray to Shiva or meditate on Shiva. He would be the Lord of Yoga, the Yogeshwara. Okay. But Brahma, how much of the God energy does Brahma carry? What percent?
Zero.
Zero. The Creator carries zero God energy? Zero. Well, wait a second. Is he an imposter? What's going on here? He's a jiva. What's a jiva? How many jivas are in this room? We're all jivas. Jiva means soul. So Brahma is a position that one can hold. Who? Anyone. What did it just say earlier? After 100 lifetimes of doing your duty and conducting yourself in admirable way, but in a properly behaved manner, you too can become Brahma and become a creator of the universe. You can also take the position of one of the demigods if you qualify. It's like becoming a CEO of a corporation. How do you become a CEO of a corporation? You qualify. As Frank is a ship captain, how does he become a ship captain? Because he's qualified to run a big boat. So, same idea. Okay. So, non-materialists, lifelong celibates. Why do they stress celibacy in the Vedic system, in the yoga system? Why is celibacy stressed?
You don't spill your potency.
You don't spill your potency. What is the most powerful product created by the blood in the body? In the male, in the female? What? Tell me. Sperm and ovum. Are these not creations of the blood? Why are these the most powerful physical products? Because they create life. Do they not?
Mm-hmm.
Can you not create a baby? Can we not create babies? Are babies not miraculous? We scratch our head all the time and go, whoa. When your first baby comes out of the womb, you are gobsmacked. I can't believe I did this. Well, what exactly did you do? I don't know. I did something. There it is. Pretty good, huh? Yeah, that includes you, my friend. So, if we spill semen in particular, because semen is ejected from the body and we lose it, we are losing or wasting or spilling powerful creative potency. A yogi will transform or transmute the semen into a substance that will rise up through the Sushumna, the pathway that travels through the chakras up to the brain, and will increase brain power. That's why yogis can perform miracles. That's why yogis can travel to other planets. So that's why they say, if you're a lifelong celibate, if you're a person who never spilled any semen your entire life, now come on, that's not easy to do. Especially for us Westerners. In India it's far more common, but not here. No offense. It is difficult. But that's who shows up in these planets, the higher planets. Mahar, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka. That's who you're hanging out with there. You might say, well, I don't want to hang out with people like that. Fine. You don't have to. But that's who hangs out there. These are people of high, much higher, subtler, refined vibration. So it says here, Naishtaki Brahmacharis, that means people who are fixed in celibacy, Vanaprasthis, people who wander through the forest. Now we don't see that here so much. In India, this is very common. They live in the forest. Well, where do they live? They just under a tree. They walk from here to there, and they sleep under a tree. Kalindi and I went up to Badrinath one May, because you can only go in May. High Himalayas. And we got attacked. We're an ambassador. All the way up. You know, we went up to 10, 12,000 feet in Himalayas. Took better part of the day. How many hours?
14 hours.
So we're sitting in the back, no AC, driver in the front. And you're seeing parts of the road that have just caved, and buses crashed down on, and big trucks. Way down, you know, you're going driving by, and people are coming the other direction, and all along the road, all the way up, are the sadhus, the holy men. They're just walking along. They got their knapsack on, their whatever they own. Whatever they own, they carry. Let's put it that way. They got a stick. They got a stick and a tiffin and maybe a rolled up a chadar or a blanket. And they're walking barefoot. And they're walking up to 10, 12,000 feet. And you're passing them. Mm-hmm. And then once you get there and you stay there for a few days, then you see them, they arrive. The ones you passed on the road. So these are vanaprasthis. These are people who are attached to nothing. Well, how do they eat? If somebody gives them food, they eat. If no one gives food, they don't eat. They don't grow stuff. They don't work for a living. They're devoted to God. Very common in India. Very common. Here, they'd say, why don't you get a job, you bum? Well, in America, they would say that. You know, that's not acceptable here. You'll sponge off the people. How dare you? But that is part of the culture in India. So even here, you're seeing it. And sannyasi, so these celibate people, these vanaprasthis, these holy men we're talking about, and sannyasi means somebody who's a complete renunciate, pretty much like I said, but he'd be more of a preaching guy. He's always teaching people. They do not produce any progeny. They don't have kids. Most of these wouldn't get married. The destination or the abode of enjoyment attained by them is situated above these three worlds. And those who are abrihad vrata means they are devoid of the great vow of celibacy. This is the most difficult vow on earth. Celibacy. And I'm sure not many of you will argue that point. These persons who are absorbed in sex life stay within these three planetary systems. Bhur, Bhuva, Sva. Okay? So if you want to get to the higher ones, better cinch up your belt. Okay. Do you have material desires or are you desireless? The more you have no material desire, the higher you rise. The more material desires or whatever amount of material desires you maintain, the more you stay in these three levels. Those who engage in fruitive, pious activities enjoy themselves in the heavenly planets and then repeatedly take birth back down here on Earth. Here he says, those who are engaged in fruitive activities as described in the Vedas worship me by performing yajna, by performing sacrifice. Now, this is what we said at the beginning. You must perform sacrifice, yajna, to God. You must. This is what we would do by going to church on Sunday. That is performing sacrifice to God. Now, do you have to go to a church to do that? No, you don't. But most people will only do it for that half hour when they're in church. And outside of that, they don't think much about it. You can do it on your own in any way, shape, or form. But it must be done. It must be done. They worship me by performing sacrifice. After taking the remnants of the sacrifice, they become free from sins and pray for entry into heaven, Svarga. Then when their pious merit has become depleted, after enjoying themselves in the heavenly, enjoying the heavenly pleasures of Svarga, heaven, they fall back down to earth. In this way, people engaged in fruitive activities are described in the Vedas repeatedly as they transmigrate in this material world. Transmigration of the soul. So here he makes an interesting point here. They become free from sin and pray for entry into heaven. So in order to get into heaven, you have to become free from sin. Or you have to do something that merits it. In other words, you can't be doing negative activities and you can't be a criminal and think you're going to get into heaven. Now, when somebody, for example, sacrifices their life to save somebody or rescue somebody who's been in an accident or is in a burning house, many stories you hear. And in the act of rescuing somebody, they are killed or they die. What happens to that person? They go up to Svarga immediately. That's where they go. They go right up to heaven. Because that is a selfless act. Anybody who sacrifices their own self, puts their own safety on the line on behalf of others, and dies in the process. Well, even if they don't die, they will get absolutely fantastic karma for having done that, which they will then enjoy at some point in time. But if they die, they're immediately elevated. It's said throughout the Vedas that if somebody is fighting on a battlefield, fighting the good fight for the right reason, you know, we could argue about that all day long, you know, which is what's the right reason. They sacrifice themselves to do their dharma, to do their duty, and they die on the battlefield. They are again raised up to the heavenly realms. That's like, that's your ticket. That's why when you read all these stories, like in the Mahabharata, and these warriors, and well, you can not only in the Mahabharata, you can read about all kinds of warriors that just go out in the battle. They don't care. They don't think about death. They just go and they do their best on the battlefield, knowing they could die in a second, and they very well do die. Doesn't matter. Because that's my duty. With that attitude, you're up to Svarga. That's how it works. And I'm not sure about the 72,000 virgins that the Muslims are looking forward to meeting. I'm sure there is a realm where that actually happens. I read years ago in this book called The Astral World, which is not a Vedic book per se, but it was pretty interesting. In there it said, whatever culture you're involved in, or civilization, and whatever they say where you're going to go, like in the American Indians go to the happy hunting ground, they go join the ancestors in the sky where the buffalo are plentiful, and you know, however they depict heaven. So the Muslims go for 72 virgins or whatever it is. There are those places. Those places exist on the astral plane. And then he's quoting Bhagavad Gita. Abrahma bhuvana loka punar avartin arjuna. O Arjuna, one is compelled to repeatedly return from all planets in this universe, even up to Brahmaloka or Satyaloka.
I think we're going to have to break out of this universe.
Yeah, I better break out, huh? Okay, I'll put away these notes because there's pages of them, naturally. Okay, we're going to bust out. So first of all, he says, from the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again. My abode. Now, by human calculation, 1,000 ages taken together form the duration of Brahma's one day. So now we're talking about time calculation. The duration of the material universe is limited. It is manifested in cycles of kalpas. A kalpa is one day of Brahma. He's on a different time length. Just like if you take a spot in the middle and these people going around it are going around it very quickly, right? The central point, like Mercury around the sun. Then you take Brahma, he's going around it like that. So by the time he goes, or even this is Saturn, it takes the moon 28 days, let's take that example, to go around the sun, right? How long does it take Saturn? 30 years. So there's different time calculation. A kalpa is a day of Brahma, and one day of Brahma, or Brahma, the creator. And one day of Brahma consists of 1,000 cycles of the 4 yugas or ages. The Golden Age, Satyayuga, Treta, the Silver Age, Dwapara, the Bronze Age, and Kali, the Iron Age. The cycle of Satyayuga, the Golden Age, is characterized by virtue, wisdom, and dharma, or duty. There being practically no ignorance and vice, and the Golden Age lasts for 1,728,000 years. In the Treta Yuga, or Silver Age, vice is introduced. And this yuga lasts for 1,296,000 years. So now you understand where you're located here. In the Dwapara Yuga, the Bronze Age, there's an even greater decline in virtue and spirituality, vice increasing. This yuga lasts 864,000 years. And finally, in the Iron Age, Kali Yuga, the yuga we have now been experiencing for the past 5,000 years, there is an abundance of strife, ignorance, irreligion, and vice, true virtue being practically non-existent. This yuga lasts, Iron Age, for 432,000 years. Kali Yuga's yuga vice increases to such a point that at the termination of the yuga, the Supreme Lord himself appears as the Kalki avatar, vanquishing the demons or the materialists, saves the devotees, and commences again another cycle, beginning with the golden age. So when they make these predictions that the world is coming to an end, or Armageddon is here, or judgment day is around the corner, true, but we only got another 427,000 years to go. So I wouldn't get too upset. You don't necessarily have to sell your house real quickly. You're fine. We're not going anywhere. Not for a long time. Now, in truth, things are deteriorating. But since the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu 500 years ago, that inaugurated a golden age within the Iron Age. And that golden age is meant to last for the next 10,000 years.
Are they our years?
Our years. These are our years. These are our years. So we have seen that there's been a resurgence in consciousness and awareness that has taken place, particularly since the 60s, you know, for those of us who were young in the 60s, the 1960s. So these four yugas rotating 1,000 times. These four yugas, you heard the numbers, times 1,000. A Mahayuga is all four of these yugas taken together. Times 1,000 comprises one day of Brahma. One day. And at the end of a day of Brahma, there is a temporary dissolution of the material creation. Where? From Maharloka on down, all these planets. These are hellish planets down here. Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Mahatala, Rasatala, and Patala. That's the hellish realms. There's far too many. You don't want to go there. So all of these, including Svarga, Bhuvar, and Bhur, where we are, all of this becomes annihilated. The flood, the great flood, but sometimes it's not a flood, sometimes it's a fire. It's all burned in fire. So there's a temporary dissolution because these higher planets are not dissolved during the night of Brahma. At the end of Brahma's life, all of that is dissolved. All of it. Can you imagine? Okay, so these 100 years, by earth calculations, Brahma's 100 years, by earth calculations, total 311 trillion plus 40 billion earth years. So that's the scale that we operate on. This is not the spiritual realm. This is the higher material realm. So I don't know what Stephen Hawking would have to say about that. But there it is. By these calculations, the life of Brahma seems fantastic and interminable. But from the viewpoint of eternity, it is as brief as a lightning flash. Now you see him now. Where did Brahma go? He was here a minute ago. Can you imagine 311 trillion years going by so quickly? Where was I? In the causal ocean, there are innumerable Brahmas rising and disappearing like bubbles in the Atlantic Ocean. Brahma and his creation are all part of the material universe, and therefore they are in constant flux. Now you see him, now you don't. Now you see him, now you don't. Now you see him, now you don't. This life that you have is virtually nothing. No offense. I mean, it is like hardly anything. It's like a firefly. Light on, light off. Gone. This Brahma Jyoti, we cross over the material universe into... This is like the sun planet and the sunshine. This is the effulgence coming off down from the spiritual world. The all-pervading, impersonal Brahman, or God's effulgence. That's what this is. And what is this effulgence? Spirit. Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Holy Spirit. This is it. What's it composed of? Millions and billions of souls. That's what it's composed of. So this is pure spirit. As they say, Holy Ghost. Holy Spirit. This is it. It pervades everything. None of this could exist without it being pervaded by spirit. It could not. Even dense matter could not exist without this Brahman going through, you know, the fabric of life, if you will. Okay, so then you can go up to, this is the Vaikuntha planets. Vaikuntha means anxiety free. There are different realms that you can go to. You can also go and hang out with Shiva if you're focused on Shiva. And here's Mahalakshmi Devi and billions of other Lakshmis, the goddess of fortune. And all of these planets are different planets, Vishnu planets. Planets of God, but in different manifestations of God. Depending what you're attracted to. So if you're attracted to Sita or Ram, depends what you're attracted to. There's so many manifestations of Vishnu. So if you are attracted to them, then you go to that destination. Whatever you focus on, that's where you go. If I go into the car and head west and I drive to Galway, where will I end up? In Galway. I will not end up in Cork, which is south. Same. Whatever you focus on, that's what you will achieve. So once you cross over the Brahmajyoti, or this is called the Viraja River, this separates the material creation from the spiritual world, then theoretically you don't come back. But there are higher worlds yet, and this is where Krishna's world. Here you see. Vaikuntha is more about the realm of God that is awe and reverence. Like when we think about God and awe and reverence and respect, and we have, oh my God, God is so powerful. Allahu Akbar. That all happens on this realm. But if you get up to Krishna's realm, it's not like that. It's Madhurya. Madhuri. It's very sweet. That's where you actually interact with God in a very familiar and loving way. So if you like all the pomp and ceremony and the formality and the awe and reverence, then this is for you. But if you like to hang out and have some fun and do stuff with God, then this is where you want to go. Madhurya. That's the sweet taste. This is Goloka Vrindavan. This is Dwarka. This is Ayodhya. These again are other realms that one can go to. But they're in a much, much higher framework.
You said the 1,000-petal lotus?
Yeah, that is a 1,000-petal lotus. So that's where Radha and Krishna are carrying out their pastimes. The pastimes of God are eternal. They are sometimes manifested down in the material world. Are they material when they're manifested here? No, they're always spiritual. But they're sometimes manifested down here. But the pastimes go on eternally, both in the spiritual realm and in different places in these universes at different times. Krishna was on the planet a mere... Now, these years I just told you, Krishna was on the planet 5,000 years ago. Think about it. What I told you, 311 trillion? He was on the planet 5,000 years ago. I mean, he was just here. He was just here. I mean, I don't know. He was here a minute ago. Where is he? In that concept, that's what happened.
Okay.
This shows the covering of each universe. So when you become liberated, we have the physical body. We've talked about this. The physical body, the earthly body, is made up of earth, water, fire, air, ether. Boom rapanalovayu kamanobuddhrevacha. The subtle body, sukshma sharira, is made up of mind, manas, intelligence, buddhi, and ego, ahankara. That's the subtle body. The subtle body travels from lifetime, birth, from body to body. When you take birth, you take the subtle body with you. All right, and the soul also. The soul is spiritual. So when you actually penetrate the covering of the universe, because you're becoming liberated and you don't have to take another birth, the coverings, the first one is earth, then water, then fire, then air, then ether, then mind, then intelligence, and ego. These are the different levels covering each universe. So as you go through each of these levels, you dissolve, like earth, you dissolve the earthly body, the earthly concept. Water, you dissolve the emotional body. Fire, you dissolve the ideological body. Air, you dissolve the intellectual body, and so on, like this. So that's what those are. Each universe is covered like that. Have the scientists found those layers? No. Why not? Didn't your microscope find it? No. Well, not yet. They won't find it. Because they're not qualified. Just like they never went to the moon. That's a hoax. To make you think they went to the moon because they had to win the race against the Russians. That's a Hollywood soundstage. We're on the moon. Watch us. That's smoke and mirrors. Or as Bertie Ahern would say, smoke and daggers. Right? So, why didn't they go to the moon? Because the moon is a heavenly planet. It's actually a heavenly planet. You can't go there unless you are qualified to go there. It's not dust. It may appear that way. But heavenly planet, the heavenly realm, is not happening on the physical realm. You can't see the heavenly realm with physical eyes. How can you? Anyway, I know it's a controversial subject, but you know me. I don't shy away from that. Okay. Questions, comments? Throw the floor open. Go ahead, Catherine.
Have you ever done a chart for someone who was up in the heavenly planets and came down?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Many people. Mm-hmm. Many people. You can meet them. The Beatles were demigods come down. Whenever, you know, it's one thing to have a group, a singing group, a musical group, and be successful. It's a whole other thing to shift the consciousness of the planet, because that's what they did. Humans don't do that. Gods do. And George Harrison was a devotee of Krishna.
Dr.
Fabulous. Did you see it? It was like 2 or 3 hours long. Fabulous. Yeah, and the last 20 minutes is spectacular when she tells how he died. Yeah, no, he was very high soul. They all were. Well, he was a high soul spiritually. The others are high soul in terms of being demigods come down. You see people. Remember that time we went to South India? We happened to be in Chidambaram, and they had a dancing festival on. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And there was a guy, a young guy, who was doing the Shiva, what do you call it?
Tandava.
Tandava Nritya. The dance of destruction that Shiva does when he destroys the universe. You all see this pose of Shiva, something like this. I'm not very good at it, but you know what I mean. And this guy was not human. Shiva was in this guy's body because he was doing dance moves that you have never seen anybody do anywhere in your lifetime. So every now and then you see people like this and you're going like, what did I just see? What just happened there?
Well, it's like composers and things like that.
Composers, I mean.
They just hear the music and they're able to just write it down.
That's Mozart, again, going back to Mozart. He, all of his notation, none of it was crossed out or erased and reconfigured. It was all perfect notation with no erasure. Who does that? All he did was hear it, and of course he was highly trained from the time of childhood, and he just wrote it down on the musical note paper. That's what he did. It all came to him. Fait accompli. Perfect. Most of us struggle with creation. Shifra?
I just have a question about a sannyasin, because I thought a sannyasin was somebody who had been a householder who left the family that was
can be.
And then went on.
Can be, yeah. Can be. It's true. But sometimes they're a sannyasin. They start with, as a brahmachari, a celibate student, and then they will take sannyas later. But yeah, you can have been a householder. You, by the way, if you are a householder and you've had children and you've had sex and you've had this and you've had that, does that preclude your being a spiritual person in this lifetime? No, it does not. So you can attain that position whenever you're ready. So none of that is sort of held against you. It isn't. It's wherever your consciousness is. So you're not held back by that. Sharam?
I know a dance move for Krishna.
You know a dance move for Krishna? Are you going to show it to us?
He held his feet with one hand and he held a head of a snake.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Kaliya Krishna. That's the Kaliya serpent who's poisoned the waters of the Yamuna, and Krishna dances on his head and he has to drive him away from the Yamuna and purify the water.
And with his footprints on his head, he was attacking.
That's right. How old did you say you were?
He's been watching on a cartoon about Krishna.
Good man. Just keep it up, my friend. I am not worried about you at all. Excellent. Thank you for that. You've made some very good contributions. Shifra sent me an email. She says, well, do you mind if I bring my son? And I said, yeah, why not? As long as he doesn't create a disturbance for others, why not? So here he is, he's contributing very valuable information for us. We didn't know we'd be so blessed to have you here, Sharp, but we are.
I remember earlier on you were saying about the yogis that tried to raise Rishishona. Do all the yogis go? Can they get out of the material?
They raise the kundalini up to Shishumna.
Yeah, the kundalini. Can they get out of the material universe by doing that?
Yeah. You can. That's the mechanical process. You can do it. You raise your consciousness up through the seven chakras, right? The seven chakras are energy centers in the body. in the Kundalini they call the serpent power. And when it it raises up through the different chakras, one's consciousness increases as it goes from chakra to chakra. The first three chakras, the base chakra, which is right at the base underneath, the second chakra, which is
sacrum.
The second chakra is the genital area, and the third chakra is solar plexus. So the base chakra, if you want to give it a term, it is I am. So it's a fundamental consciousness of knowing that you exist. I am, I exist. That's the base chakra. The second chakra is I feel. And that's where we go into relationship with others around us. And we create relationships. And that's how sexuality comes into play. Because we want a mate. And once we have a mate, then we create a family. And from there, expansion takes place. Then the third chakra in the solar plexus is I do. So this is acting. The vast majority of people in the material world go no further than the first three chakras. They never go above that. And you can live your entire life in those three chakras. So the third one, I do, means what you go out and do, and whatever your activity is or whatever you're up to, whatever you're trying to do or achieve. That's the third chakra. Once your consciousness raises up from the third chakra into the fourth chakra, which is the heart, that's I love. Now people think, I love, or I've fallen in love. And here I am. And we can actually feel it sometimes in that. But that's not this love. This is this love. The love in the second chakra is all about conditional love and material love. And I want something in exchange. When your consciousness reaches the heart, then you begin to love unconditionally. You love everybody. You love through compassion. There is no concern about race, color, creed, and other kinds of discrimination once you've reached the heart chakra. Then the throat is I speak. What? The truth. I only speak the truth. I only tell the truth. Then third eye, I see. I see things as they are. I understand. Third eye, right? When the third eye is open, you know past, present, future. People can't fool you. And then, thousand petal lotus, topmost chakra, you're back to I am. This I am at the bottom, base chakra, has no consciousness. It's just I am. This chakra is I am with full consciousness of everything. This is God consciousness. So an example for the base chakra, when you see people, for example, in Africa, they don't have enough to eat, they don't have shelter, they don't have water. I mean, they show them to you on TV all the time. These people are in base chakra. They're barely existing. Their whole life is around, will I stay alive today? That is base chakra. And maybe they have children, so they rise up to the second chakra from time to time. But their whole life is generally spent in base chakra. They don't do anything. There's nothing to do. They don't farm. They don't have anything. So that's very low karma. Very difficult karma to be in. Does that help any? You can bring it up mechanically, or you can bring it up through the grace of God. There's the ascending process and the descending process. So a yogi, through a yoga practice and raising the kundalini up the chakras, is using the ascending process. He's coming from here, he's ascending up. The descending process is by having a relationship with God, and God will bless you. And God will give you.
Bhakti yoga.
Yeah. It's a yoga of love and devotion.